What's up, South Baltimore? This is Kevin Lynch with the South Baltimore Now podcast. Here we have another episode as there's the primary elections coming up in Maryland on May 14th. There's a lot of positions up for election in Baltimore City. One of those is the councilperson in District 11. Today, we're going to have incumbent councilperson Eric Costello on the show. He's been in the office for almost 10 years, and he's running for re-election. He has an opponent this year as well. So we're going to talk to Eric about where he's from and what it's like being a council person in South Baltimore and some of the other areas he covers, and just talk about some issues he's passionate about and some things he'd like to see moving forward. Obviously, if anybody's familiar with our website, we're not a super political website, and this is certainly not going to be a super hard-hitting interview by any means, but just a chance to talk to somebody in South Baltimore. I've known Eric for over 10 years, so I've known him a long time. So certainly, Eric's somebody I'm very friendly with, and I'm excited to have him on the podcast. So, Eric, let me just say, welcome to the most tagged person in Facebook history. Eric, welcome to the show.
Kevin, Nate, thanks for having me on today. Great to be with you guys.
Of course, excited to have you. So Eric, let's just take some steps back here. Tell us, where are you from and how did you end up in South Baltimore?
Grew up in upstate New York, moved down south back in 2006, got a job with the federal government in IT. And spent my first year living in Northern Virginia. I had a group of guys that I grew up with that were teachers and counselors in the school district. I would come up to visit them once a month. We'd go to a Ravens game, an Orioles game, hang out at Cross Street Market, and simply fell in love with Baltimore. And after my lease was up after a year, I moved to Otterbein, and I've been here ever since.
Awesome. And as a longtime resident of Otterbein and Federal Hill in South Baltimore now, what are some of your favorite aspects of living here?
I love living in Baltimore, and especially in the South Baltimore Peninsula. To be able to walk 5 minutes to go to an NFL game or a Major League Baseball game is just incredible. We've got great restaurants, folks that are engaged in the community, a ton of great small businesses. We're steps away from the Inner Harbor and from downtown. Easy access to 95 and 83. You couldn't find a downtown place that I think on the East Coast that has more assets in such close proximity to this neighborhood, and just love living in the downtown area.
Yeah, you said it. It's so cool where we can feel like we're in a tight-knit community. Almost feels like the suburbs in a way, where kind of everybody knows everybody, even though we're right next to downtown, even though the actual topography is nothing like the suburbs, but certainly a great community, which is also, like you said, walking distance to downtown and the stadiums. And obviously, you got very involved in this community. Over 10 years ago, you were the president of the Federal Hill Neighborhood Association. I know as a journalist, there was a lot of sensitive issues that organization was dealing with at the time. So tell us about being involved with FHNA. How was that experience?
It was a great experience. Got an opportunity to meet with neighbors, listen to their concerns, help organize them, do a lot of cool things in the neighborhood. One of the things that we did when I was the neighborhood president, we built the community garden at Digital Harbor High School, which over the years, pun intended, has really blossomed into this incredible community asset that neighbors can use. And more importantly, to help bridge relationships with students and faculty and staff at the school. But was involved in a number of efforts over the years during my time in community leadership. One of the things that we really focused on was revamping the neighborhood newsletter, working to repair relationships with local businesses, get them to advertise, use the proceeds from that to help put on community events, to make contributions to nonprofits that are doing great work in the community, like the South Baltimore Learning Center, which focuses on adult literacy, or the Baltimore Station in Sharp-Leadenhall, which focuses on recovery efforts for male veterans that live in the community. So we're able to do some really cool things, and really proud of that work that we were able to accomplish with our neighbors.
And you've now been on the council for almost 10 years. Tell us about joining the council. Was that something that was spur of the moment, or is that something you had thought about for a long time?
I had never planned on being in politics. I was simply an auditor in DC, and I had gotten very involved in my community. And I had a number of people who had reached out and encouraged me to put my name in the hat for the vacancy that was left by former Councilman Bill Cole when he left to go head up the Baltimore Development Corporation.
And then, of course, you were seated in that position. You've had a couple of re-elections that were successful, and now you're a council person. So tell us, what is day-to-day like being a member of the Baltimore City Council, especially in this District 11, and what are some of your favorite parts of the job?
I love this job. It has been an honor of a lifetime to represent the 11th District. I'm incredibly passionate about public service. The job can be very consuming, but I take it very seriously. Any given day, it is hard to say the challenges that you're going to be faced with. It can be anything from the most mundane issues of there's a 2-inch hole in someone's sidewalk that BGE left, or a tree that needs to be trimmed that the city hasn't trimmed, all the way to some of the most serious issues of life or death with a homicide investigation, for example. So it's really anything under the sun. And the role of a city council member is really to be that first point of contact for residents and businesses when they're trying to get help from government. We get a ton of issues that are outside the purview of what we deal with on the city council. So we get a lot of state issues. Those could be unemployment insurance, for example. We built very strong relationships with our state legislators, Senate President Ferguson, delegates Clippinger, Lewis and Edelson. Before that, delegates Hammond, Brooke Learman, Brian McHale, to work with them to be able to route those requests to help get action for people. We get a ton of federal issues, whether it's veterans benefits, Social Security, issues with the post office. I know you guys are no strangers to the concerns that have come up with the post office over on South Hanover Street. And we enjoy really strong relationships with our U.S. senators and our congressmen to be able to help get people action on those concerns when they bring them up. Every single hour of the day is a field trip. I have no idea what issue I'm going to be dealing with. It's 2:15 right now. At 3 o'clock, I'm going to be dealing with some crisis, but I look forward to the challenge and trying to be able to help folks.
And I know from living here, there's a lot going on in District 11 that not only includes all the businesses and residents of South Baltimore, but it also covers downtown, parts of Mount Vernon and Upton. I can't imagine there's a district with more commerce going on. Plus, we all know firsthand that South Baltimoreans don't stand for things being left undone. How does your office try to tackle all of that?
It's an incredibly diverse district. Neighborhoods include Bolton Hill, Madison Park, Marble Hill, Mount Vernon, State Center, McCullough Homes, Upton, Druid Heights, Heritage Crossing, Seton Hill, Towns at the Terraces in Poppleton, all of downtown's west side, Port Covington, Locust Point, Riverside, South Baltimore, Key Highway, Federal Hill South, Ridgely's Delight, Otterbein, Sharp, Leadenhall, and the Inner Harbor. So there's a lot going on. There's 4 universities, 4 hospitals, a number of large-scale companies that are headquartered here, small businesses. We've got a number of different Main Street areas, whether it's in Federal Hill or in Upton or in Mount Vernon. So there's a lot going on and there's a lot to balance. Each of those neighborhoods has unique situations and unique issues that need to be addressed. So it's constantly trying to balance all of those things to make everything work.
And how many people do you have helping you out in District 11?
We are a small but mighty crew. We've got 3 full-time staffers that work with me. I've been incredibly blessed to have amazing staff over the years. Most of them at one point or another have lived in the South Baltimore Peninsula area or downtown, and they do an incredible job helping the communities that we represent.
And obviously you're running for re-election and you've told us how much you love the position, but have you ever thought about running for a different office or leaving politics altogether?
You know, right now, I feel like the place that I can have the most meaningful impact is as the councilman in the 11th district. Genuinely love what I do. There's a number of accomplishments that we've had over the years, but there's still a lot of work remaining that I really want to see through. Work that's critically important to our communities, whether it's the renovations at Riverside Park, upcoming renovations that'll be coming to Solo Gibbs Park in Sharp, Leadenhall, things that deal with city services like traffic calming along the Ford Avenue corridor, issues dealing with crime and public safety in our schools. So there's still a lot more work to be done. And I think a lot more that I'm in a position to accomplish working with the community.
Yeah, certainly. I just went for a run and stopped by the renovation of Riverside Park. So that's certainly very close to the finish line there. I don't know if it'll be the complete finish line for that park as there's multiple phases of what they want to do. But gosh, we've been talking about that since I think 2014 or 2012.
Before that, Kevin, that project started when Bill Cole was in office. A lot of what we do on the council is behind the scenes and in the weeds. And I've stayed very active on that project And I'm quite confident if I hadn't stayed active, we wouldn't be at the point that we're at today. But the beginning phases of that project started back when Bill Cole was in office. Some of these projects are incredibly complex. The level of regulatory approval that's required from city, oftentimes state, and even sometimes the federal government to get these projects started and then to get them completed and across the finish line is incredibly complex. And I know it's frustrating when we look at a project like the renovation of the ball fields at Riverside Park. It's been a long time coming, but there's an incredible level of gratification that you get when you're able to finally get that project across the finish line.
I know it's going to be very exciting for the community. And just taking a look at it today, the ball field certainly look awesome. So I hope they can keep that pristine condition for a bit and become a great asset to the community. Because obviously, we're a community that not only has a high school, but also has a lot of active rec leagues and social adult leagues and everything in between. So I know that'll be a great thing to have back in the community. I know even Thomas Johnson's talked about bringing back their soccer team once that field's completed. So I know a lot of people are really excited about that. And I think we're probably a couple months away from taking those fences down, and that'll be very exciting. Something that may be a little bit exciting for you: you're in a re-election race right now. You ran uncontested 4 years ago, but a fellow Federal Hill resident, Zach Blanchard, is running for the seat. How's the race going, and is it exciting to be back in a contested election?
Look, I love campaigning. Campaigning is a great opportunity to interact with folks in the community. I've knocked over 100,000 doors over the last 9+ years since being in office, and I'm a firm believer that you can't effectively govern if you're not listening to people. And look, a lot of these issues are complex. Not everyone is going to be on your side for every single issue. And a lot of what we do is spend time listening and understanding what the concerns are and trying to balance those and come to some type of solution that works for everyone. A great example of that is Victory House, which I know you're familiar with. You used to live down the street from there. And we dealt with that site on the 1700 block of Light Street, kitty corner to Thomas Johnson, with significant drug dealing, prostitution, and a host of other criminal and quality of life issues directly across the street from an elementary middle school, which is completely unacceptable. We stayed on that issue as soon as I got in office. We're able to get that site shut down. I was able to work with Housing and Community Development after doing a couple of tours of the inside of the building, which I won't repeat what we saw on your show, but it was pretty bad to say the least. We're able to get that site shut down, get that in the hands of a local developer and get apartments there and get that back on the tax rolls and make sure that it was something that was contributing to our community. But a lot of these issues folks have strong opinions on. And I think at the end of the day, we all want to see the neighborhood succeed. It's about how to get there. But I don't think we can get there if we're not effectively listening to people that we represent. So I spend a lot of my time talking with folks, listening to their concerns, and trying to figure out how we come up with solutions.
Sure, Victory House, that's a blast from the past there. And luckily, sometimes when a bad issue is in the past, you can start to fade it out of your memory a little bit. So I'm very thankful the Victory House is no longer there. I lived within a couple of blocks of that house for many years, and now it's a nice performing asset to the community as a became an apartment building by the Chasen Development Company, which has become kind of one of the rising stars of development in the city. Certainly, they're probably doing some other projects in your district, probably downtown, but I know they do a lot of work in Fells and Upper Fells Point. So that's certainly a house that a lot of residents in that area are happy is something different now. And then a couple issues we'd like to talk with you about. A lot of these issues we similarly talked to with Mr. Blanchard. So me and Nate are both parents of kids at the local elementary middle schools, which are all performing very well, which is a credit to everything from the staff and the parents, the community and people in the city, that it's really exciting to see those schools doing well. But what you'll see is there's not a ton of excitement for the high school in our area, which is Digital Harbor, certainly working people there. But when it comes to that time to commit to a high school, which we have in the city because of school choice, you don't see a lot of people even considering Digital Harbor. You don't see a lot of new Digital Harbor sweatshirts around the neighborhood. So are there any changes possible to try to get that school a little bit more momentum and really turn it around a bit?
On the topic of Digital Harbor, that's a set of concerns that we hear frequently. First, let me start with a point of frustration that I have with the situation in general, and that's the city council's lack of influence on the direction of city schools. And that is something that's important to note is entirely outside of the control of the city council. What we're able to do is develop strong working relationships with leadership at North Avenue and with leadership at our schools and our PTO associations or our school family councils or our community school operators. And those relationships are critically important to helping move the needle. For example, this morning, I heard from Principal MJ or Mavis Jackson from Digital Harbor High School about Rec and Parks not having made improvements to the softball field at Latrobe Park for the Lady Rams.
Yeah.
So as soon as I got the call from her, I got on the phone with the director of Rec and Parks, explained the situation, and asked that we have a maintenance crew out there before the end of the day so that those ladies have a place to play that is deserving to them, right? But oftentimes, we're not in a position on the city council to dictate education policy that's legislated at the state level or to make demands of the school system. For example, and I've spent an inordinate amount of time studying the city budget inside and out. I know the city budget better than just about anyone in the city other than the budget director. This will be my 8th year chairing the budget committee. I can tell you that we don't have an option to change their budget. We don't have a legal option at the city level. What the city contributes to city schools is mandated by the state. There's no two ways around it. So we don't have the ability to confirm school commissioners like an appointment. When the mayor appoints, say, the police commissioner or a new fire chief, the city council has to vote on that person. We don't have that authority. And it's a point of great frustration because I think for too long, partners at both the state and the city level did that thing where they point their fingers in both directions like the Scarecrow in Wizard of Oz. And what I think parents and community members are looking for is someone to take ownership of the success of the school system and of individual schools. There could be changes along the way for digital, but I want to be realistic about what power and authority the city council has and doesn't have. There are things that we can change. There are things that we can't change. And it's important to be upfront and honest about what it is that we have control over in this position.
And have you heard any chatter about any thoughts of putting a magnet program at Digital Harbor or any kind of changes to the curriculum at all there that could lead to it turning around quicker rather than at a slower pace?
It's something that has been discussed over the years. We haven't seen the movement from the school board to make that happen. And that's something that we need the school board to be engaged on, to take a hard look at.
Gotcha. And it's great to know there's some work taking place on that softball field at Latrobe, because I know as somebody who tries to get in some work with local kids who play baseball, there's a limited amount of places we can play. And that field at Latrobe Park /FSK has been underwater a lot. So I'm very excited on the level to know that field is having some immediate work done, because if you got no home plate, you can't really play baseball or softball.
No, our ladies at Digital Harbor deserve a world-class field to play on. This brings up something else that I'd like to talk about with respect to the football field at Digital Harbor High School. My opponent is an assistant football coach at Digital Harbor. I have a deep amount of respect for that role that he plays. I admire his desire to make improvements to that field at Digital Harbor High School on the campus, which they currently have, but they don't play their games there. Their home field is Banner Field. But I think it's important to note there's been a lot of discussion about efforts to improve that field and expand that field into a full regulation field where students could play home games on campus. And the history here is really important. That was something that was looked at 20 years ago. It is simply not safe for student athletes with the dimensions of that current field to have a full-size football field there. There would literally be no space in between the sidelines and the fence, which could lead to a serious injury. Any expansion of that field would require eliminating parking that is utilized by faculty and staff, which would push parking into the neighborhood. And also, that community garden that was established there maybe 12 years ago has been a great point of pride for the neighbors who were involved in building that and all of the work that went into writing grants and all the hundreds and hundreds of hours of labor by neighbors in that garden, really a labor of love. And the relationships and the connections that were built with students at Digital Harbor, there's an entire horticulture program that has been developed there. It has built long-lasting and lifelong relationships between students and faculty and staff and members of the community. And the plan that has been proposed by my opponent would completely eliminate that garden and move it to another location. And I think it's important to really understand that history and really understand those relationships and understand the complexity of it before offering up proposals like that.
There's no doubt that Digital Harbor has its real estate restrictions, but it is good that we do live in an area with a lot of really great parks. And obviously, if you go to a park, you might see random different things from Digital Harbor. So they certainly make their way around the community. And luckily, we do have some good options for them, despite the kind of real estate challenges they have on that campus. And good to know that the softball girls will have a better field to play on soon. Moving on to the issue of crime, which is always fun to talk about, I'm sure. But obviously, Baltimore, like many cities, has had its issues with crime. And South Baltimore has certainly had its issues. Luckily, not a ton of the most tragic of acts, but certainly stuff that can instill a lot of fear and frustration into the local residents. We're now a bit over a year into the Ivan Bates term at state's attorney. So with that, certainly there's been a different, tougher approach on crime the past year plus several months. What are your thoughts on the state of crime and any new ideas you have that you'd like to see in place?
Sure. First, I've enjoyed a really strong working relationship with state's attorney Ivan Bates and Sheriff Sam Cogan. They have been nothing short of a breath of fresh air since they both came into office last January. I've worked very closely with them on a number of initiatives, and I'm very proud to say that I have both of their endorsements for re-election, and that's based on the work that we've been able to accomplish together. For example, Sheriff Cogan has been an incredible partner in terms of special events and filling in the gaps when we've had shortages of Baltimore police officers, which is very well documented, along with performing other law enforcement functions such as traffic enforcement or parking enforcement. Based on these relationships in the community, I've been able to get the sheriff connected and make sure that we have the resources in place to provide the level of service that residents expect in the community. Working with Ivan Bates on the citation docket program to ensure that quality of life crimes are properly enforced without mass incarceration, but making sure that we are holding folks accountable and giving them an option to say, look, you can't do this. You can't trespass on this property. You can't walk around with an open container or urinate on someone's white marble steps. That is not okay. It's not okay in this neighborhood. And it's not okay in any one of the 300 neighborhoods across Baltimore City. So ensuring that there's a program in place, I've provided a great deal of support to the state's attorney and to his office to bring these issues to the forefront in front of the city council and in front of the mayor to make sure that we get movement on this program. I'll also say we have some incredible community leaders on the peninsula that have been engaged on public safety. And I'm sure that these folks probably don't want me to throw their name out there. And this certainly is not an endorsement by any of these folks necessarily, but I think it's important to note community leaders like Jeff Dewberry and Ann Tillinghast and Joe Levy and Rachel Wagner and Brad O'Brien. We've been able to work based on these relationships with them to get new technology in the community, whether it's City Watch cameras in Sharp Leadenhall and Otterbein and Federal Hill, to license plate readers across the peninsula to make sure that we have the tools in place to keep the community safe. We're going to continue to ramp up those efforts in conjunction with the community and continue to work with our partners who have been phenomenal partners at State's Attorney's Office and the Sheriff's Department to help continue to move the needle to make sure that the community is safe. Public safety is always going to be the number one priority. That's the most important function of government. And we have to have a neighborhood where people feel safe to live and work and play. That is the most paramount responsibility of government. And I'm fully committed to working with our partners to continue to see that through.
A lot of great South Baltimoreans mentioned there. And of course, Sam Cogan and Ivan Bates are two South Baltimoreans as well. So good to know.
They both live in the neighborhood. And I think they have a deep appreciation for the complexity of and the issues themselves.
One of the things that really gives South Baltimore its character is the small businesses. Obviously, we have our main streets and our shopping centers. We have large companies as well that provide some of the shoes and shirts and sugar and spices that you see in some of those small businesses as well. So what would you say is the current business environment here? And are there any things you'd like to see change to make sure that our existing businesses can flourish and that new businesses want to come to South Baltimore as well?
Yeah, that's a great question. We have some incredible small businesses all across the peninsula and throughout the entire city, frankly. One of the things that I've been very focused on is supporting our Main Streets program. So they went nearly a year without payments or disbursements from the city. As budget chair, I was able to make sure they got their money, make sure they got their money for the following year, and then get them an additional shot in the arm to help promote the businesses within the Main Street District. Worked very closely with the Baltimore Development Corporation, programs like facade improvement grants to make sure that small businesses have the resources that they need to be successful. Running a small business is one of the hardest things that you could ever do. I don't own a small business. I'm not willing to take that type of risk, but I have an incredible amount of respect for folks that are willing to take that leap. And we need to make sure that the city is doing everything humanly possible to make sure that those folks are successful. Because not only are those businesses important to the neighborhood and the vibrancy and the vitality of the neighborhood, but they also employ our neighbors. And they help make the economy turn. This is part of the complexity of this job, is balancing all of those things to make sure that these small businesses can, in fact, be successful.
As an elected politician, I won't ask you what your favorite restaurant or your favorite businesses are down here. But certainly, if you talk to anybody about South Baltimore, one of the first questions anybody will get is, where do you like to go out to eat? And where do you like to kind of hang out? So it's awesome to have an area where a people with a vast set of differences of opinions can all have a different favorite place to get pizza or a drink or all kinds of things. So we all certainly love the small business community here in South Baltimore. Now, South Baltimore is a constantly changing area. It's obviously changed a lot since you've moved here, starting with your time at the Federal Hill Neighborhood Association and almost 10 years on the council. We have an entire new community being built at Baltimore Peninsula, formerly called Port Covington. It looks like the Inner Harbor is slated for quite the revamp. So talk about A, being in an area that really so much investment is pouring into, but also there's a lot of community concerns with a lot of these projects. So what's it like being in an area with so much construction all the time? And what are your thoughts on the current state of things?
Look, there are certainly growing pains associated with living downtown or near downtown. One of the things that is important to keep at the forefront is the need to grow the city. Downtowns cannot be successful if they don't have a core of population. And we've lost a significant amount of population across the city to the tune of 56,000 people over the last decade. And we need to rebuild that population in order to be successful. And we've had an inordinate amount of growth in the 11th district. We have led the entire city, even the first district in Southeast, in terms of that growth. And I recognize that there is a balance to be had. There is certainly concerns when new development happens, and that is understandable, and I can fully appreciate that. And I understand those concerns, like when we talk about parking or we talk about increased traffic and noise. Those are legitimate quality of life concerns that need to be taken into consideration. But it's also important to note that we need a density of people here in order to be successful. Downtown is in a very precarious position at the moment, and we need to be thinking about doing everything that we can as a city to support it. There are 140,000 people that rely on downtown every single day for their jobs, and that's an incredibly important part of our community. And I can understand that one of the great things about this is that we can have civil discussions about disagreements. A lot of what I do in this role is working with community leaders and community members to understand these concerns, bringing developers to the table to address these concerns and trying to strike an appropriate balance for how we can continue to grow the city without having a negative impact on the surrounding community.
So the primary election is on May 14th, but obviously the world has changed a lot in the last few years. So there's many different ways to vote and have your vote count. So Eric, tell people, how can they vote this year?
8 years ago, it was a lot easier to explain how you can vote. And you're right, Kevin, a lot has changed. So election day is on May 14th. Early voting is going to be May 2nd through May 9th. So that's 8 consecutive days from a Thursday through a Thursday. I believe 7 a.m. through 8 p.m. Those are the same hours for election day. If you've requested an absentee ballot, you can request that online or by mail, or through the Board of Elections. Those started getting mailed out this past week. Those ballots come in two forms. You can get one mailed to your home. You can also get an electronic ballot that you can fill out. You can print it out and fill it out. You can mail that back to the Board of Elections. Alternatively, you can drop that off at vote drop, like certified vote drop-off boxes when those start getting placed in the near future. So there's a variety of ways to vote. I would just encourage everyone to please make sure that your voice is heard. Everyone gets one vote. Please make sure you vote and get read up on these issues and on the candidates.
4 years ago, the race for mayor took a week to be decided. Do you see things happening any quicker this year? Obviously, there was a lot of mail-in ballots because of COVID 4 years ago. Do you think the results will come in any quicker this year?
You know, we've seen a large amount of mail-in ballots requested. The way it works is the polls close at 8 p.m. on election day. Each of the individual polling locations, for example, if you live in Locust Point, you vote at Francis Scott Key Elementary and Middle School. Those polling locations will close at 8. Shortly after, they will have numbers from those locations, and those will be reported individually back to the Board of Elections. The mail-in ballots, those are counted, and that information is released sometime after 8 p.m. on election day. In addition, you have something called provisional ballots. So, for example, you may have a person who's unsure of their residence or where they're registered to vote. So they may be given a provisional ballot on the day of election day, and then that will be checked against the voter rolls to make sure they're voting for the right council district, for example, and then those get counted. In addition, there are overseas members in the military or contractors who are deployed overseas. That's a separate bucket of votes that need to get counted. So it's very difficult to say how quickly all of this will get sorted out.
Exciting stuff. Certainly, as you look at this election season, I certainly encourage all of our readers and listeners to do their research on the local elections and make educated votes. Seems like a lot of the national elections are pretty much settled when it comes to these primary elections. So certainly we encourage all of our readers and all of our listeners to take the time and really go local this election and really look at those local issues and get out there and vote.
Kev, one thing I'd say on the primaries at the national level, we do have a contested U.S. Senate race. The two leading candidates for that are David Trone, who's a congressman from the 6th District incumbent, and Angela Alsobrooks, who is the incumbent Prince George's County executive. So it would definitely encourage folks to do research on that race. I believe that race is going to be pretty close.
Another exciting race to watch. So Eric, before we sign off, any last message you'd like to give out to our listeners?
Look, I absolutely love this job. I love the challenges associated with it. As I mentioned before, every hour of the day is a field trip, and I'm not sure what issue I'm going to be dealing with next. I get a great deal of gratification from dealing with really complicated issues and help bringing resolution to people. I'm not the best person in the world at taking a victory lap or doing press conferences. That's not really my thing. I like being in the weeds on complex issues and finding solutions. And I hope to earn the support of the people that I've represented to have an opportunity to continue to work with them for another 4 years. And I want to take a moment to thank Nate and especially you, Kevin, for what you guys are doing, helping to get information out there. Kevin, I know you have done an incredible job of highlighting the different things that are going on in the small business community. Oftentimes, southbemore.com, your website, is really the go-to to find out what's going on, what restaurant is going to be going in at a certain location, what small retail shop is going to be opening up at a place that recently went out of business. So just want to thank you for that work and keeping folks in the community informed.
Thank you, Eric. Yeah, I wish we could extend that coverage to more parts of the city, but we're just South Baltimore for now. So Eric, thanks a lot for joining the show, and we will see you around.
Appreciate it.